Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Sophie Vanderbroek to the broadcast. Sophie is the Chief Technology Officer of Xerox Corporation and the President of Xerox Innovation Group. In these roles, Sophie is responsible for Xerox's global research labs and the mission of creating high-impact innovations to drive profitable revenue growth. In addition to her work at Xerox, Sophie also holds board membership positions at IDEX Laboratories, a diagnostic and information solutions provider for health and water quality, and Analogic, a medical imaging and aviation security organization. She's also a fellow of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers and serves on the advisory council of the Dean of Engineering at MIT. Sophie earned her master's degree in electromechanical engineering from the University of Leuven in Belgium and earned a PhD in electrical engineering from Cornell University. I recently caught up with Sophie by phone in her office in Silicon Valley, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed the employee skill sets in place within Xerox and the types of skills that she looks for in prospective employees. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discuss the process of innovation within Xerox and how strategic and innovative plans are created. We also discussed how Xerox is looking to bring more female talent into technology, the Palo Alto Research Center, and how she brings fun to the innovation and idea creation process, among other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Sophie Vanderbroek, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Sophie, you are the Chief Technology Officer of Xerox, as well as the President of the Xerox Innovation Group. And I wonder if we could begin with kind of the breakdown between the two sides of your sets of responsibilities, which I'm sure are quite complementary. I wonder if you could take a moment to talk about both sides of those, and perhaps within the greater context of Xerox itself.
Thank you for the question. Yes, they are definitely complementary. As you might know, Xerox at this point, we are a global corporation, 140,000 employees across the world. We are the largest corporation in business process services and document management services. At this point in time, about 60% of our revenue comes from business process outsourcing services in the areas such as healthcare, transportation, financial services, education, and more. The 40% comes from our traditional printing and imaging and publishing business, which continues to do very, very well and which has high operating margins, and we continue to light clients around the globe. And so in my role as Chief Technology Officer, I partner with the business group presidents and with, of course, our CEO and our senior team to constantly predict what are the disruptive changes that are coming at our clients. What are these disruptive waves that could swipe away our clients' businesses or our own businesses, and then make sure that as a business we are positioned to successfully provide the services to our clients that they need to successfully provide services to the end users so that we can all successfully serve those disruptive waves. So as part of that, we look at the trends, we define the investment portfolio together with our joint venture partner, Fuji Xerox, which is now more than a half century old. We invest well over $1 billion in RD&E each and every year in research, development, and engineering. And so how do we do the right investment portfolio? What is the strategy? And then go execute, obviously. So with my head on leading the research labs, which is a Xerox Innovation Group, we call it. It's a global labs around the globe. We have people that not only know what waves are coming, but researchers are actually creating the new waves, whether the new waves are in computing or whether they are now some of the waves coming up are, of course, in the Internet of Everything or machine intelligence, and we can talk about that. So within the labs around the globe, we envision the future today together with our clients to do a lot of co-innovation and co-creation, but we envision the future today and then make it a reality for our clients, for the world, and of course for our business. So these are the two roles. One is an operational one, leading the global research labs. We have a lab in India, the joint venture lab in collaboration with Fuji Xerox in Japan. We have a lab in Europe. We have a lab in Canada. And of course, we have our most famous lab, PARC, which has been incorporated about a decade ago in Silicon Valley.
Excellent. You talked a little bit about the creation of the strategy as well as the interaction with customers, which are essential to develop the insights as to where innovation will be focused. Can you talk a little bit about some of those strategies, some of the things you briefly touched on, computing, the Internet of Everything, machine intelligence as some of those topics? I wonder if you could dive a little bit deeper into some of the things that the team are focusing on and why.
So let me give examples. Again, we are in many different verticals, but I can give examples of our healthcare business, which is a multi-billion dollar business, as well as our transportation business. And so together, of course, the researchers, we are the catalyst. Our mission is to catalyze high-impact innovations for Xerox, our clients, and the world, right? And catalyze is a very well-selected word. I became CTO. I've been with Xerox for a quarter century, 25 years, gone through many different industry changes. I became CTO a decade ago, and a decade ago, our mission of the research labs of the Xerox Innovation Group was to be the spearhead of innovation for customers, the clients, and the world. So now we catalyze, because the world is flat. The world really has changed significantly, and in addition to the amazing researchers, scientists, engineers we have in the lab, we now really embrace the startup ecosystem, a huge amount of co-innovation with the customers, universities, we've always embraced collaborating with universities. And so together then with the business partners, we define the strategies. For example, underlying everything we do, I would say at a high level, the Xerox point of view is that work can work better, right? So you have in traditional enterprises, people struggling with information, struggling still with paper, although for sure we have been saying for four decades now, paper will ultimately go away and disappear, but we help people streamline their business processes and their workflows in a knowledge worker environment. That is something we've been doing for decades and decades. We are also, again, significant, for example, in healthcare, and we work with hospitals. Our software is in over 2,000 hospitals, or Juvo, Midas Plus software, where we help hospital administrators and nurses and physicians manage more effectively the flow of individual patients through the hospital and making sure that with great focus and individualized precision, the patient gets the care she needs. And through leveraging analytics, machine learning, all of these great technologies, making sure that you can also do significant prescriptive analytics to know and share with the hospital when is it the right time for the patient to go home, or watch this patient carefully because we believe they will end up in the ICU, the intensive care unit, if you're not careful, et cetera. So it's a flow of patients through a hospital all the way back to their home and into the distributive healthcare sector. Like we recently made an investment in HealthSpot, where we help them with a lot of their business process outsourcing needs. We work with payers, the government and commercial payers, as well as with pharma to really, again, help them do their work better by doing a lot of processing work at massive scale, such as we process about 950 million healthcare claims on a yearly basis with individualized precision, because again, of course, every individual case is different. So that's about the flow of patients all the way from wellness through the hospital, through home, through this whole network ecosystem in healthcare, including managing their benefits. In transportation business, for example, we help city officials manage the flow of citizens through urban cities, right? We call this urban mobility. How do we truly give city officials the insights on how to optimize their transportation infrastructure in large urban areas so that they know at which time of the day and which day of the week they need either more buses or less trains. They have areas in the city that are no parking spots available. And how do we help them create an infrastructure where people can really seamlessly across multiple modes of transportation, including car sharing or bikes or Uber or Lyft, how do we help cities really optimize the flow of people through their city? Today, or for the last many years, Xerox has managed lots of processes for the city. So we have been doing, for example, a parking management. We run the Easy Pass solutions in many states where these toll booths. We do 37 billion ticketing transactions a year for doing ticketing for buses and trains, etc. So there is a huge, huge volume of transactional data flowing through our systems because we take that workload out of the city, and at Xerox we do it for them. And now we're moving up to the higher level to providing, again, the cities the insights based on the data we have at our fingertips combined and integrated with the publicly available data to help them really seamlessly flow cities through their cities, which results in more livable cities, which especially young people that want to live in urban areas, whether it's in the U.S. or whether it's in Europe or whether it's in the emerging world. It also makes for greener cities because less traffic in the city means less polluted cities. So these are just some examples. At the core of all of it is helping people work better because we know work can work better, and helping them process work, either number of patients or number of citizens at massive scale with individualized precision because each and every one has individual needs and wants. And so to finish this up, so at the bottom line, we are a B2B, a business-to-business company. We sell to cities, we sell to hospitals, we sell to banks, we sell to schools, large enterprise, you name it. But all of the innovation, all of the beneficiaries of our services, or a lot of the users, the beneficiaries is also the B, but the users are the individuals, the student, the teachers, the patient, the citizen, etc. So what I like to say is we are a B2B2One, with the one, again, being any of the people that I mentioned. And in order to do that, you need a lot of high-tech technology related to machine intelligence, automation, the Internet of Everything, etc. These are enabling technologies, ways that are right here in front of us that you can embrace to provide, to really help people work better.
Yeah, I know that one of the methods you and your team have employed, you refer to as dreaming sessions as a mechanism by which some of these new ideas are born. Can you describe the process that's used in these cases?
Yes, that's a great question. And we love doing dreaming sessions with the clients because in the end, another big difference between 10 years ago and today in how we innovate, as I mentioned earlier, it is this whole ecosystem, right? And it starts and ends with the user of the service that our clients will provide to them or that we provide directly to them. And so we focus from very early on in the labs at the human layer and not only the technology layer. We focus on human-centric design. And this is something we have been doing in the Park Lab in California for four decades, in our research lab in Grenoble that's 20 years old now or a little bit older. Some of the first people, the first group was ethnographic experts. The lab we opened in Bangalore 5 years ago, within the first five hires, there were a couple ethnographic experts, because it all starts with the human that will benefit from the service. Again, if I'm the citizen, I need to have simple ways of the city communicating to me of what my most seamless ways to get from where I am, point A to point B, the same as a patient. I want to be able to manage my information, etc. So what we do dreaming sessions, and then we do a lot of ethnographic studies. With the dreaming session, what we do is we bring our B customers, we bring the enterprises, we bring physicians, we bring people to our labs, and we listen to them, and we try to understand their pain points, and then we give them a heads up and an insight into the kind of research we are doing, and then they say, wow, can you really do that? And then we say, yes, we can, and how about this? And then they start to ask questions, and we really get into this mode of dreaming together about a better future, really addressing their pain points and their dreams. And I call it dreaming sessions because I like Henry Ford's quote. So Henry Ford used to say, if I'd asked my customer what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. And of course, he created the automobile. And so we can't just ask the customers what they want, because they will think about what they have today and have make some incremental suggestions. We really have to dream together. That's where the word came from. But more importantly, in each of our labs, these ethnographic experts, they go out into the field. And so they live in hospitals for weeks at a time. They live and observe how people commute in cities, or how people park, or they live in schools and see how teachers teach. Or, of course, they live in enterprises and see how people do their knowledge work. So that is the notion with the dreaming sessions. And we do many, many, many in each of our labs, in Park, in Grenoble, in Bangalore, in Canada, on a weekly basis.
Excellent. You started to talk about some of the skills that you hire for ethnographic experts, for instance. I wonder, as you think more broadly across the Xerox Innovation Group, what other kinds of skills are growing in demand by your team and why?
The Xerox Innovation Group, which comprises of all the Xerox labs around the world, including Park, which is now an innovation services business since we incorporated it a decade ago. So what we're looking for are always deep skills in your special area, right? Moving the boundary of the unknown is a hard thing to do. So you need to be expert in what you do. So I would say about 60% of the people in the labs have advanced PhD degrees in their domains. Most of the PhDs are in computer science, related to, of course, machine intelligence, I mean, statistics, data analytics, all kind of skills related to being able to streamline and automate business processes, as well as being able to create deep insights in real time so that our end users can really benefit, right? It's doing a lot of analytics and creating real-time insights to create great value. And so computer science, data analytics continues to be extremely important. In addition, of course, we have the people with ethnographic skills. We continue to have amazing people working in our hardware labs and in our materials labs with those specific deep technical skills. So we have people that work on flexible electronics, printing smart 3D objects, on continuing to disrupt what else is there that can really enable digital manufacturing to become a reality, for example, in addition to all of the amazing services that we have to provide. So it continues to be a spectrum of skills. I would say the highest in demand are the computer scientists with advanced, extremely deep skills in machine intelligence, visual analytics. So it's how do we allow computers to truly see, hear. For example, we have a call center business where today we answer 2 million phone calls each and every day. Each day, 2 million calls, 50,000 people that are answering phone calls on a daily basis. I can clearly see the disruptive wave coming. In fact, it is coming, where virtual agents will be able to do most of the jobs that real agents are doing today in an even more precise, more empathetic way, because we have computer scientists working on how can I, by interacting with the customer or with the user that is calling, how can I truly show empathy so that I can actually influence a person to do a certain thing. For example, in healthcare, we need to influence people to take their medicine or influence people to really make sure that they remain fit and sleep enough and whatever the right health-related items are that those specific individuals need to do. So yes, so there is a whole range of skills and capabilities that we constantly look for. So if there are some amazing listeners that are excited to work at a company that solves some of the world's biggest problems, working on healthcare, transportation, urban mobility, education.
I also wanted to ask you about something that I found so interesting and curious. You've talked about innovation and developing creative ideas need to be linked with having fun. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about this, maybe some personal examples about how you do this, but also how you think about it in the greater context of your team in terms of the innovation process being linked with fun.
Let me say what I mean with fun. And so you need to be truly happy. You need to feel comfortable. You need to feel that you to be a good innovator, right? Because innovation is really hard. You constantly have to remove barriers. You have to fight for funding. You have to fight to get the best team members on the team. You have to constantly influence that, yes, this new business model, although it's not our traditional business model, it does really work. You have to convince people within the company and outside the company, the whole value chain, to help bring your creative idea to the market. And so in order to do that, you have to be able to bring your whole self to work. You have to make sure you're not working for a corporation where you need to put a suit on that just doesn't fit. And so what I mean with fun is two things. You have to have a balanced life because you need to be happy at home in your personal life as well as at work, because as an entrepreneur, these two is going to be like a 24/7 integrated life, as I have done for now many decades. And so at work, what it really means to have fun is you could work for an organization where you're not the only woman or the only person with an accent or the only gay person or the only old person or the only, I mean, you name it, right? Build an inclusive environment where everybody, no matter their gender identification or their race or their culture or their religion or atheist beliefs, that you can be yourself at work. That is really number one. And Xerox has created a culture where that is totally possible, and that is one of the reasons I've been there for over 25 years now. And so creating this inclusive culture is really extremely important for innovators. Number two, within a company, you have to be able to really work on problems or on projects that truly make you excited, right, that you truly believe in. For many scientists, and in fact, my first job when I got my PhD in microelectronics, I worked up in the IBM Research Labs. What turned me on was working on extremely difficult problems, pushing the knowledge in my field, silicon germanium transistors at the time, publishing papers in the best conference in the world, writing patents. I mean, so it's really a challenge by the technical difficulty and challenges of a particular project. And many engineers and scientists love that. Over the years, I've come to know that what really excites me now is being able to help a teacher provide personalized education for a student, even though the student is in a class of like 35 students and the teacher is alone in a middle school or elementary school trying to teach a student with specific needs, or being able to help a nurse in a hospital spend more than 25% of her or his time with the patient by eliminating a lot of the paperwork that the nurse and looking for data or medicine or you name it, right? There's so much administrative work that you can automate and allow her to work better and spend more time with the patient, or being able to create a better urban mobility so there is less pollution in so many cities around the world. Having several kids myself, I believe leaving the world a better place is important. But having fun at work is really being at a company where you can truly be yourself and working on projects and things that have a mission that you really believe in. And then you cannot have fun at work if you don't have fun at home. There, what's important is making sure you're healthy, right? Making sure you schedule in time for exercise, or making sure you schedule in time for sleeping, or try to eat healthy. I mean, have a best friend. Everybody needs to have a best friend. And so that is very important. But in addition, also, what I always did, I raised my three kids for many years since they were very little. And so there I really learned that in order to have fun at home, I had to delegate as much as possible. I mean, everything that took away time with my kids, I had to make sure that I created up time. So I learned to delegate and free up time to be with my children. So that was very important by simplifying also my life overall. I also leveraged IT as much as possible. I worked from home. I had an old PC at home, if I could, to really try to integrate work and life. And I've educated throughout my career. It's less needed now because people know, but I've educated managers that it's not the 8-to-5 being in the office that counts. It's really what you deliver no matter where you are, when you are creative, or when you deliver what you need to deliver as part of the job. So that is really, it's a long answer, but I feel passionate about it. And we try extremely hard at Xerox to make sure that the culture of allowing you to be yourself at work and working on projects that could really excite you because you truly believe in the mission of what you are doing, because they can bring their heart to work in addition to their minds, and that's so important.
Sophie, you personify something that I know is a cultural touch point for Xerox, and that is grooming women leaders, especially in technical fields. Obviously, it begins with your chairwoman and CEO, Ursula Burns, but there are a number of prominent women, present company included, in significant roles. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about Xerox's path, but more generally, kind of the path ahead that other organizations might find, especially those that have a dearth of female talent in their technical ranks.
Thank you for asking that question, because one of the suggestions I give to new students or people that are looking for a job, and especially if it's female students, I tell them, go somewhere where you do not need to be a trailblazer. Go somewhere where amazing women have blazed a trail for you. Xerox definitely is that for me. We have had many amazing women, as you said, Ursula Burns, our current CEO, before her for 10 years, Anne Mulcahy, another amazing woman, was our CEO. We've had amazing women in multiple different leadership roles in the company. I'm still the first woman CTO, Chief Technical Officer, so I still have to blaze a little bit of a trail, but I'm happy that behind me we have many amazing women engineers and scientists that are part of our organization. And so it's really managing, and Xerox has been managing diversity for well over 5 decades. But all throughout definitely the last 50 years, we have had the senior management, originally all guys at the top 50 years ago, but they had to believe that diversity, again, whether it's more black people, Hispanic, gender, et cetera, as I mentioned before, that that is very important. So we have metrics we track. Number one, we create this inclusive environment, as I said before, so women are going to want to come work for us. And then, of course, you need what you don't measure often could slip away if you're not careful, right? So we actively track it. We make sure that for every position that we either interview from the outside or the inside, that we have a diverse slate of candidates in the running to get the particular role. We have at the company many caucus groups, which are employee resource groups, that bring forward and elevate to the leadership team the key issues that specific employee resource groups deal with. And so what we have is that when you become a corporate officer, which is like the top 20, 25 people at Xerox, Ursula Burns, our CEO, appoints you to become a champion for one of the caucus groups that is different than yourself. And so my first pleasure, and that's a 3-year assignment, the first time I became the champion for black women at Xerox, which was truly amazing because it forced me to deeply show empathy and understand what are the specific issues that black women at Xerox deal with, which are different than white women or Asian women or men. And so I really got to know, I became friends with so many new sisters now, and it's just amazing how then I was able to identify and work with the management team to put a specific mentoring program in place for the black women at Xerox, and we did a whole bunch of initiatives. After 3 years, I became the champion for the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people at Xerox, and truly, they had been invisible to me, and so being a champion for the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, again, I really, really learned to understand their struggles. And we worked hard with the core leadership team in Xerox to make sure that any proposition that came forward to support gay rights, that we supported that in court. I remember having a roundtable with some of our best transgender employees, and I still get emotional because they were telling me how they couldn't afford the surgery to truly make them who they really were. And so within a couple of months, we made sure we had transgender medical benefits established because, in fact, it didn't cost us anything given how few people go through this transition on a yearly basis, like one a year in Xerox. So in the bigger scheme of things, it didn't have any financial impact, and it was just the right thing to do. And so by having these caucus groups, these are just two examples of what the employees elevated to us that we could then act upon, because these are things that if it's not part of your culture and who you are on a daily basis, you just wouldn't have been thinking about. So the fact that Xerox now for decades, this was all established even before I joined the company, had this active support for caucus groups is truly amazing, and again, makes us a better place for women to work. In addition, specifically in research, which is mostly engineers and scientists, where it's even harder to hire amazing women, given the very low percentage of women that graduate with PhDs in electrical engineering or computer science. Myself and my leadership team, we have an advisory committee made up of two of the technical women in each of the labs around the globe that constantly give us advice on how to make the Xerox research labs the best place for women with a doctorate degree or women scientists or women overall to come work and help us then solve some of these big challenges we're working on.
Sophie, many people will be familiar with PARC, the Palo Alto Research Center, which has, since 1970, really been a legendary source of innovation. I know that's now a portion of your team. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about its influence on the greater team, its fit within the greater team, and if you care to share any sort of ideas that are emerging from it.
Yes, PARC is now PARC, Inc. We incorporated the Palo Alto Research Center a little over a decade ago. So, of course, PARC was established, as you said, back into the early 70s, and I fondly recall the front of Business Week. I don't recall it, but I've seen an article on the Office of the Future in 1975, so 40 years ago, and George Paik, the co-founder of PARC, being able to very clearly articulate how the Office of the Future would look like, that the Office of the Future would have a terminal on every desk, and with the push of a button, you could communicate with your colleagues no matter where they were around the world. And so he was extremely visionary. And by the way, this was a time that mainframe computers filled the whole room. The color typewriter was just introduced. So how did the founder of PARC really know this? Well, of course, he knew, because in the early 70s at PARC, there were prototypes of the mouse-driven user interface, of the Ethernet. The laser printer was invented at PARC. And so, as well as even Dynabook, which, if you look at it, looks very much like an iPad or a tablet today. And so what we have always believed is that the best way to predict the future is to create the future, as Alan Kay, who was a researcher at PARC in the 70s, used to say. And so PARC, over the decades, continued to make amazing innovations. We spun out about 40 companies over the last many decades. Some of the innovations ended up in Xerox products. And then about 12 years ago, we decided to incorporate PARC so that, in fact, even more of the innovations, especially those that were outside the now very broad Xerox set of businesses that could then be successfully commercialized and truly impact the world. So today, about half the revenue at PARC comes from doing research for Xerox in areas like healthcare, automating customer care, urban mobility and transportation. I mean, across the array of helping to differentiate the solutions and services that Xerox offers in the future of digital manufacturing, etc. The other half come from very interesting business models. The PARC team does research for commercial clients all over the world. So the PARC, for example, is very strong at ethnographic research and expertise, going to truly observe how users use technology and deal with interacting with new products. And so we do it as a service for other companies globally that might not have anthropologists or ethnographic experts. And then we work with them to build prototypes, or whether it's helping them move to the new world of information-centric networking, for example, instead of point-to-point networking, or helping, again, a whole set of other services as well as hardware-related projects, including, you name it, blue lasers, robotics. I mean, we have many programs in the environmental clean tech type space. And that leads me to the second income, external income, besides the client income, comes from the government. We do many programs for the government. In fact, we are doing projects for ARPA-E, for example, ARPA related to environmental projects on batteries, on a whole bunch of other energy-related projects. But we do also projects for the National Institute of Health, for the Army, across the board, for multiple government agencies, including most recently, we were able to do a great demo of our disappearing chips that are sensors that, through embedding certain levels of stress in these tiny little sensors, we could then remotely make them fracture so they become fent again and totally disappear into their environment. I mean, really, really cool programs that the government is relying on the amazing park people to do and to innovate. The next external revenue comes from licensing and intellectual property, park being incorporated, so park has their own patents, so we have a licensing business. And then finally, we work with the startup ecosystem. If there are startups that can benefit of some of the great technologies that are being created at park or have been created over the last many decades, then some of our researchers will collaborate with the startup in return for equity. So at any point in time, we have equity in a couple startups. It's not the main core of our business, but that's yet another way that park really creates value to the innovation ecosystem. So it's a very unique business model that we have in our Palo Alto Research Center in Silicon Valley.
Amazing the number of areas it's reaching into. That's very exciting. Well, Sophie Vandenbroek, thank you so much for a fantastic conversation and sharing a bit about your experiences as Chief Technology Officer and President of the Xerox Innovation Group. It's been a great conversation.
It's been my pleasure, Peter. Thanks so much.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.